With our special guest tonight, Dr. Gary Schwartz, The Sacred Promise. We'll get into more of his afterlife experiments when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. Gary, I want to get into the Wright Brothers moment in a moment, and we'll take calls, but I want you to finish your thoughts on the angel stories you were talking about.
So, by the way, I thought it was curious that that you're from the, quote, city of angels, and here we are talking about angels and assistance. And
synchronicity is everywhere.
Yeah. Someday I hope that I get to interview you someday, because I would much prefer to hear your stories than be telling mine. But anyway, the so Rhonda has this, she needs to find this policy. She's looked everywhere she would think to look and didn't find it. And then she asked this question in her head. And she heard a voice. And the voice said, go into my office and go open the closet. And you'll look down and you'll see your father's flag. And behind the flag, you will find this policy. Now, who would think to find a policy behind an old flag? And as Rhonda tells this, shares this thing, and she describes it, and I describe it in the book and much more in hers, she hears this voice, and this peace came over, essentially.
A calming piece.
And she knew that she had to trust this. And she also said that if she goes into the room and opens that closet and goes to that flag, if it's behind there, the world will never be the same to her again. Her consciousness will be transformed. She went in, opened the closet, saw the flag, found there was a couple of papers behind there. And one of those was the missing insurance policy. Jeez. And so... And the book is filled with examples of these kinds of moments. And what's wonderful is you can bring this into the laboratory. Multiple mediums have told me that there are, I call them alleged angels, hypothesized angels, and they're as eager to participate in this research as Harry Houdini or Albert Einstein or Susie Smith or Marsha Eklund. That if there is this greater spiritual reality, it's up to them. You know, people ask me the question, they say, Dr. Schwartz, are you trying to prove that a greater spiritual reality exists, be it deceased people or angels or the source? And I say, absolutely not. What I'm trying to do is to give them, if they exist, the opportunity to prove themselves. My job as a scientist is to just be like a gardener. You know, let's say you want to find out whether a seed can grow. If you're going to be a good gardener, what do? You provide soil, you provide light, you provide
fertilizer,
water.
You do it all.
Exactly. You provide the optimum conditions for the seed to grow, and then it's up to the seed. And the seed will either be a real seed, or it'll be a fake seed, it'll be a vital seed, or it will not. And yet, it's up to the seed, and the seed's either there or it's not. Okay? That's the approach that I take. And the remarkable thing is, if you provide the optimal conditions, what this book clearly points to is that we're experiencing a Wright Brothers moment.
And what is that?
Well, you know, a little over 100 years ago, there were no airplanes. And human beings had been trying for hundreds, if not thousands of years, to fly. And many people tried, as you know, and they had disastrous results. And then the Wright Brothers, 1903, December, in Kitty Hawk, five people witnessed that plane fly, just fine, if I remember the history. The first flight lasted for all of 12 seconds, longest I think was 59 seconds. The next day they tried to replicate it, they couldn't, plane didn't fly. It wasn't enough wind, because it took a minimal amount of breeze to get them up. The third day it did. Now anyone who was there, and it was very few people, anyone who witnessed it, they knew now that flight was possible. Of course, many people thought it had to be impossible. They thought it was fraud or whatever. And here's what I encourage people to do. George, let's let you and I and all of your witnesses, and your listeners, let's imagine that we're all at Kitty Hawk. It's 1903. We don't know anything about satellite phones and this kind of technology that we could be listening worldwide to your show. We don't know any of this. It's 1903. Do you think that we could have imagined that within a few short generations there would be these gigantic machines carrying hundreds of people flying all around the world at speeds greater than any creature had ever, you know, moved on the Earth.
How about 66 years from then, imagining being on the moon?
Yes, well, let's get back to Wright Brothers. Could we have imagined that literally these planes would be going 24/7 and that literally every second, unless it's a storm or whatever, weather condition, somewhere a plane is landing or taking off? Literally, that's what's happening every second.
Yeah.
Could we have imagined then, 1903, that these planes would be, that millions of people would be traveling on these planes and that they would be extraordinarily safe given all this? Could we have imagined then that there'd be a brief window of time where we could get a good meal on a plane? Could we have imagined that eventually radio would come to these machines, and then television, and then the sound-canceling headphones, and then computers, and ultimately the World Wide Web, and most amazing of all, we would all take it for granted? We wouldn't even think about it anymore. We don't even think twice about taking a plane anywhere. Well, I don't know about you, but I'll speak for myself. I couldn't have foreseen that 100 years ago with the knowledge that that was there. And what I realized was that what we're experiencing today, and people who read the Sacred Promise book, it's like being at Kitty Hawk. That if you read this book and you learn all of this new research, both the self-science that we can all do, as well as the new technology, that we're having what I call a Wright Brothers moment. Because what we're seeing is the possibility. I call this a proof of possibility book. We are seeing the capability of that all this and more is not only real, but the question is now, can we look to the future? Can we envision what's going to happen? How far can we take this, like the soul phone? And the biggest question for me of all is, how long will it be before we all take this for granted? That's the scientific and spiritual challenge of all of this. And I must tell you, and you can sense this, I guess, in my voice, that I'm very enthusiastic about this. I mean, I think this is cause for optimism and celebration. Is it, you know, people say to me, gee, but how do you know if this is true? And I explain to people, I say, the book is not called The Sacred Proof. It's called The Sacred Promise. But we need Wright Brothers. We need people who are going to try and to envision, and it's going to be a collective effort. And I think it's going to. I think your audience, by the way, is going to launch this book. You realize that on the 11th?
There's no question about it.
You're going to launch this book, and if I could just say one appeal, and then please ask me a zillion other questions, and I'd love to take questions from the audience. Here's my hope. You know, I've written a number of other books. I've never, quote, promoted them, unquote. Meaning, I wrote them, I let them out, and then whatever happened to them happened. People came to me, including, you know, Coast to Coast. People came to me. And whatever would be, would be. But with this particular book, it's different. This book has such promise, and it could be such, we're all part of a moment. And this is the kind of book that really should be read by lots of people. It's got great opportunity. In fact, one of the things that I'm doing, because I've been an educator all this time, and what I love about your show is that it's in depth. It's not soundbite news, as the news that we were just talking about earlier on one of the commercials. This is a in-depth news, an opportunity to really explore. And what I'm actually doing is creating an 11-part mini-series on the Sacred Promise book that anybody can watch for free, to invite people to really hear it in depth so that the audio and the visual complements the written. And the only way that this is going to unfold is if the public says, we want this to happen. And the way that you'll do it is your audience will Facebook people. Your audience will tell their friends. You'll read it, and if you enjoy it, you'll pass on this evidence-based hope. And, the whole complementary alternative medicine movement, the whole creating the National Center for Complementary Alternative Medicine, that happened because the public demanded it. And what I hope is that the public is going to rise to the occasion, and they're going to eventually demand that organizations like the National Science Foundation and the National Institutes of Health, that they take this seriously, that they give it the opportunity, that they start investing some of our taxpayer money to make it possible to test all of this. Because our personal lives and the life of this planet may depend on this. And by the way, we're not just doing it for us, but we're doing it, quote, for them, the greatest spiritual reality. So anyway, I just thank you for this opportunity.
Super. And we'll take some calls. But tell me about this documentary you're involved in.
Well, you mean the miniseries?
Yeah.
Well,
what's it called, Wake Up?
Actually, that's an interesting thing. The documentary Wake Up is interesting because it was this is the documentary that I briefly appear in, but it has to do with a gentleman who went on a personal journey, and he happens to be he's a skilled a movie maker and producer, and he went on this personal journey when he started seeing things, and originally, he thought he was crazy, and other people thought he was potentially crazy, and it took him on this journey where he eventually came to the conclusion that he was not crazy, or was not completely crazy, certainly, and that what he was experiencing, aspects of it were real, and that the take-home message is, quote, wake up, and and these kinds of documentaries like Wake Up, or another wonderful documentary called Something Unknown is Doing We Don't Know What, which describes the five areas of parapsychology, including energy and psychic healing, which is the segment that I happen to appear in. It's a wonderful documentary. Or there's another documentary called Premonition Man, which describes this the dream detective in England and the research that was done on him, including research that we've done. These kinds of documentaries are all pointing in this direction. They're very exciting times. Challenging times, but exciting times.
All right, let's go to the phones. We'll go to Inglewood, California, first-time caller. Greg, get us started. Hi, Greg.
Hey, George, how you doing?
Good, thanks.
All right, I like your show tonight.
Good.
Thank you.
Yeah, so listen, I got this concept about what your guest was talking about, darkness and light, you know what I mean? How to, when you look at the sky and in the daytime, you don't see nothing but darkness is there because the sunlight is blinding us. And I was reading something about, the concept of dark and light, because in the Hindu scripts, darkness is like, it's basically more powerful than light, because light came from darkness, because in the very beginning, there was nothing. There was just vacuum of space, darkness. Then kind of like God kind of blew, flipped the switch and blew himself up. And next thing you know, you have all this. So, but if you take away all the light from the universe, you got darkness. So you can't beat darkness, right?
By the way, that's a great question. Thanks for sharing that. Let me suggest that there's an interesting alternative way to look at this. And that is, remember, almost all the light frequencies that exist, we don't see. Our eyes only see a tiny spectrum. So, for example, we don't see infrared light, and we don't see ultraviolet light. And that's just, a tiny sliver of all of this. But all of that light is still there. So at night, when we're seeing darkness, the darkness is really because our eyes are actually filtered and paying attention to the tiny spectrum. If we were wearing infrared goggles, as George was talking about, which enables us to see infrared, we would know that everything is glowing in the dark. It turns out that from a photon of or a vibration point of view, there's actually light everywhere. That once, if you would, God decided to manifest and made light, that light is so brilliant. In near-death experiences, people typically report that they experience this absolutely overwhelmingly bright light. And the question is, how do you explain this, especially given the fact that their cortex is electrically dead at that moment? And one possibility, of course, is it's just an artifact. It's somehow, it's just misfiring of neurons, which, of course, are not firing at all. But another possibility is what's happening is that the filtering of our eyes are no longer, we're no longer constrained by the filtering of our eyes. And so we're seeing more of the light that is there. Now, having said all that, the gift of darkness is really filtering. And with that, we get discernment. So one of the, and by the way, I'm really glad that you asked this question, because one of the things it points out is that we are on an evolution of knowledge, right? That's been our whole history as a species. And although the Buddhists or the Christians or the Jews or whomever, we had wonderful mystics and we had, you know, wonderful people of exploration. And what they experienced, the gifted ones, we should take very seriously. But the explanations for those experiences are evolving. I mean, I don't know, for example, whether Buddha knew whether the Earth was round. I don't know if Buddha knew whether the Earth actually revolves around the sun. His experience may have been limited by his perceptions as well. So with the evolution of humanity and with the evolution of what we call science, we can learn more and more, and therefore our spirituality can grow more and more. So when I talk about a science-based spirituality, it's really science in the service of our spiritual awakening.
Are you convinced, Gary, beyond now a shadow of a doubt, that the other side does exist?
The answer is absolutely not. Here's what I am convinced about, and I am convinced about this. I am convinced that there's a serious possibility, if not probability, that there's a greater spiritual reality. And I'm saying this as a scientist as opposed to as a person. As a scientist, I have to go by the credible scientific data, right? And if I use the standards of the profession that I'm taught, what I say is there's great promise. Now, if you ask me as a person, based on everything that in total that I've witnessed, if I have to make a guess, what am I going to vote for? No question about it. I am now convinced that if I'm going to choose and make a choice, it's the wise choice. By the way, you want to know something a little funny? Can I share this?
Mm-hmm. A couple of minutes.
It was my millennium resolution. I decided in the year 2000 that I was going to make a resolution for the next 1,000 years. And what I was going to do is I was going to live the rest of my life as if survival of consciousness was true. I underscore, as if survival of consciousness was true. And the reason I say this is as follows, because I realized that if it turned out that this was wrong, that I was wrong, and that this
and,
belief
and
was wrong.
It just ends, right?
Right. Then when I died, I'd never know that I was wrong.
That's right. That
because
is,
it'd be all
know,
over.
That is absolutely my approach, too.
Okay. But if there is a greater spiritual reality and my consciousness continues, then living my life as if it exists was a wise choice, because then I could start thinking about that longer-term view and live my life more responsibly, more caringly, with greater appreciation for the now, but also thinking more to the continued future. I mean, think about this. If what I'm sharing is true, someday not only are we going to potentially be able to talk to Harry Houdini or Albert Einstein or whomever with a cell phone, but more importantly, after we transition, guess what? We can look forward to actually meeting these people if they're willing to meet us. I've got all these people that I'm going to potentially get to actually know in spirit that I never knew in the physical.
They'll be sitting around a table going, what took you so long?
And they're right.
And they're right. Gary, stay with us. We're going to be back in just a moment with Gary Schwartz. We'll wrap it up with final phone calls. We're talking about his work, The Sacred Promise, right here on Coast to Coast AM. His website, by the way, is linked right to us. It's Dr. Dr. Gary, SCHWARTZ.com. We'll be right back. And our special guest, Dr. Gary Schwartz, The Sacred Promise. On our next Coast to Coast program, we're going to talk about keeping you alive. So get ready for that on Coast to Coast AM. Gary, can these spirits help heal as well?
Can spirits help heal? The answer is, first of all, in principle, yes. Theoretically, if they exist, and if they are like air and water, like we discussed, and if they are energy like we are, then they can not only can they heal, but they're actively involved with healing. So theoretically, of course, the answer is yes. Secondly, there's been a long-standing history going, you know, throughout recorded history and continuing in the present, such as, I'm sure you've heard of the person, John of God.
John of God, sure
right.
thing.
And, of course, he claims that there are 33 angels and deceased beings who are working through him. That's his belief. And, of course, all of this is scientifically verifiable in principle. And then third is you can actually bring this into the laboratory, not both the laboratory of our personal lives and the actual experimental laboratory. And then I have a section in the book, and as you know, where I talk about both the possibility of healing. I give you examples of how this I tried these things on myself, and I give examples of how other individuals have called on spirit with regard to healing. I talk about how you can actually test whether under controlled circumstances, double-blind conditions, about whether spirit's actually present in a healing session and coming through a healer. And we've talked about how, which we probably should save for another show, hopefully, about how we can literally invite spiritual healing into us and practice exercises, like learning how to breathe, where we can actually bring this into our personal lives.
All right, let's take some calls again. Heidi in Redding, California, west of the Rockies. Hi, Heidi.
Hi, George.
Good to have
you with us.
I just
want to tell you I love you, and I thank you for what you do on your show.
Oh, thank you, thank you.
And Dr. Schwartz, I think you're amazing, and I thank you for being so inspirational and thought-provoking.
Thank you. By the way, before you ask your question, mm-hmm. My number one goal has been to be at least thought-provoking, to trigger thought. But the idea that this particular information is potentially inspirational is, and the fact that you've said that is very meaningful, so I'm thanking you. In fact, the goal for it, we have a new website called www.sacredpromiseuniverse.com.
Oh.
And the focus of this is on information and inspiration.
Awesome. Thank you.
So thank you.
My question is to you, how do you feel about reincarnation? And the reason I ask this is you and others obviously are able to communicate with people on the other side or spirits on the other side. It's even verified now. And also research with people of after-death experiences that are brought back to life where they claim they saw loved ones there to greet them and maybe help them across to the other mm-hmm. side. How can that be if we're reincarnated?
Boy, that's a wonderful question. Let me tell you my approach to this. First of all, of course, if there is life after death, if there's a greater spiritual reality, if our energy continues like the light from distant stars, then mm-hmm. reincarnation is possible, right?
Right.
It becomes utterly plausible.
Sure.
But now here's the big question. Is it plausible that all the energy and information that comprises who we are, which has been going out into space for our entire life. Think about that movie Contact with all that information going out. Is it feasible that all that information and information could be collected, energy information, and squeezed back into a single cell? Well, from a scientific point of view, it's improbable. But here's what's more possible. What's more possible is just like a female has eggs and a male has sperm. What we can do is with our consciousness, we can seed or, you know, new beings.
Hmm.
So what we do is we, quote, reincarnate a piece of us, the hologram or the essence of us. And that essence then can grow. At the same time, the core of us that was originally here will keep on existence and growing. So maybe it's not reincarnation versus survival. Maybe it's reincarnation and survival. Now, let me tell you why I like that hypothesis. And by the way, this is testable, too. The reason why I really like that hypothesis is it helps make sense of something that I could never understand in Christianity. You know that you know, Jesus lived 2,000 years ago, and then he passed. And if all of this is true, of course, then someone like Jesus, who experienced the entire human population as his extended family, he literally experienced all of us as brothers and sisters. It's not surprising that he would care, that he wouldn't continue to care. I mean, he would be here. And, of course, we keep calling on him. By the way, this is a James Taylor song, as you know, written by Carole King, Winter, Spring, Summer, and Fall, All You Have to Do Is Call, and I'll Be There. Yes, I Will. You've Got a Friend. So, anyway, how is it that Jesus could be potentially still here and in his core, that people could, quote, call on him, and simultaneously, millions of people could be picking up, quote, the Jesus energy and the Jesus essence could be continuing to live on with them, including, quote, being, quote, reborn. Well, maybe it's not an either-or. Maybe it's an and. And I think that that's a viable hypothesis. What do you think?
Oh, I think you could be very right. Very right indeed. Heidi, thanks for your call.
Heidi, thank you.
Edinburgh, Texas. Jeremy, you're up with us. Go ahead, Jeremy.
Hello, Dr. Short. I just wanted to ask, what is your view and explanation on spirit possession and possessing human beings?
Wow, okay, that's a very important question, and I thank you for asking it. Theoretically, again, from a purely theoretical point of view, if spirit exists, and if we are open to receiving spirit, spirit can enter through us. Now, by the way, in mediums, there are two kinds of basic kinds of mediums. One are called mental mediums, meaning that what they do is they have a conversation with spirit, but they're not being absorbed. The spirit, you know, they're not bringing spirit in the sense of allowing them to take over their body. It's like you and I are having a conversation, but I'm not possessed by you. And then there's what's called trance mediumship. And in trance mediumship, where there's very little research on this, by the way, people claim, and I've witnessed this many times, just haven't done any systematic research in it. Here, the medium literally, their person's consciousness steps out of the way, and the new consciousness assumes them. And when this happens, people then will start taking on the voice of spirit, will take on gestures of spirit. Their handwriting can potentially look like the person who was alive. And they're, quote, taken over. Now, if that's possible, and scientifically it is possible, then we get into the instance, well, if it's possible, then could it be the case, especially if we're open to it, that we could be allowing spirit to come in and take over us? That's the scary part of the possession part. And I have to confess, and I have a whole section in the book, this book, not only about the benefit, but the risks of opening to spirit. And that is, we have to become open to the possibility that if we just open the door and let anybody in, we don't discern, that we're going to pay a price, just like we would in our physical lives. And moreover, if we're open to the possibility of inviting spirit that's violent or negative, because we ourselves are fascinated with that, we pay the price of potentially, you know the phrase, be careful for what you ask for?
That's right.
Yeah, that could happen too. Now, I think, by the way, there needs to be a very serious discussion about, you know, if there is a veil, was it put there for a reason? If there is a universal source of intelligence and wisdom, the reason why we've had such difficulty in breaking the veil is because maybe it's actually been to protect us, because we are, you know, we're like infants being given a knife. And it can be used either for curing or killing. And we don't have the wisdom yet to do this properly.
So when you talk about the faith-based evidence again, you know, all you have to do too, Gary, is, you know, you look at the universe, you look at the stars, you look at what's out there, the planets, you have to conclude that there's something much more than just our existence.
Yes, you have to. In fact, many scientists have, you know, first of all, we don't have to be a scientist to come to this conclusion, but scientists have come to this by even documenting this ever more. I mean, what I remember, you know, 25 years ago when I was a young professor at Yale, when I first heard the concept of what were called superclusters of galaxies, where they literally discovered that not only were the obviously galaxies are not random, they've got all these specific shapes and certain classes of the classic shapes, but on top of that, there was even organization to, if you think of each galaxy as a dot or a star, there were patterns or structure to the galaxies. In other words, everywhere you look, you find order. Complex, creative, but order. And where does that order come from? Obviously, you look for some sort of ordering process. So I couldn't agree with you more, George. I think that we're science, rather than taking us away from these, you know, fundamental experiences, is actually bringing us closer to it.
I think so too. Let's go to Lisa Van Nuys, California. Hi, Lisa. Go ahead.
Hi, George. Hi, Gary.
Hi.
And hi to the call screener, who's really wonderful.
There you go, Tommy.
I was wondering if you could tell me the best way to ask for a miracle from the angels, because I know you've experienced them, and I have too. And I just, you know, I need a few really focused ones. So I'm wondering if you could kind of share what you feel is the best way to ask for a miracle from the angels.
Well, first of all, I must tell you, Lisa, no one has ever asked me such a question before. Of course, that's one of the joys of being able to have the privilege of doing a radio show like with George, because I have the privilege to talk to you and he who asked that question. So the first thing I have to explain to you is that no one's ever asked me that question before. Secondly, if I were being, quote, conservative, I would say, I don't know, it's a good question, sorry, I don't have any science about that. Or I would say, you really should talk to somebody like a Mary Occhino or a John Edward or people who are skilled in these areas. And by the way, there are books that one can read about this. But since you deserve an answer that goes beyond that, let me share with you the possibility, my own personal experience as well as hypothesis. I think one of the things that one needs to do is to ask with genuineness. Secondly, I think one needs to be quite specific. Helps to be specific. Third, one needs to ask with humility. Fourth, I think one needs to ask with no attachment, meaning you ask particularly if it's for the best and highest good. And the reason why I say this is because often we think that we need one thing, but actually what we need is something else. And also sometimes we think that we need one thing, but our needs might be in conflict with or not be serving something else. So if there is a higher intelligence that can see this, we would hope that they could see the bigger picture and therefore be able to better coordinate these activities. There was a movie that I saw. Sometimes comedies can be actually very instructive. And one of my favorites is actually Evan Almighty, but a previous one was Bruce Almighty. And there's this wonderful thing where Bruce is given the opportunity to be God for a while, given great responsibility. And people are asking for miracles. They all want, for example, to win the lottery. Millions of people want to win the lottery. So what does he do? He lets everybody win the lottery. And what that does is means everybody like wins 50 cents or a dollar or whatever it was. And consequently, everybody was furious because nobody got the prize. If all of us could have each of our wishes, the miracles that we wished received, we might have chaos on the earth. So what I do personally is I make my wishes known. I offer them with an open mind and heart. I hope that that they might be heard, for example. But then I quote release them and I say, I'm going to put my trust or, quote, faith that not only that there is a greater spiritual reality, but that it knows much more than I do. And I will, quote, go with the flow.
All right. Yeah. Let's take a few more calls, Gary. Sure. We're out of time. Houston, Texas, Fred's turn on Coast to Coast. Hi, Fred.
Hello. How's it going tonight?
Okay. Good.
Interesting answer. I've always found that if I was asking the angels for things, that I could not ask them for myself. It always had to be for others. For some reason, that
way it worked. By the way, I love that. Thank you for sharing that. That's been my experience, too. I almost never ask for myself.
I have had some really strange experiments. I used to be an airline pilot. You can't do drugs. You can't drink. You know, all this regular stuff. And I was at home on a couple days off, and laying in my bedroom, just taking it easy, and a bubble showed up over at the door, and I got to looking at it because it was kind of strange, and it got bigger and bigger and bigger, and pretty soon it was the size of a person, and it was a lady with long black hair, probably partial Indian lady, and she was wearing a leather dress that had fringe on the bottom, and along the blue, along the top of the bodice was one row of blue turquoise beads. And she said, I have a message for Kay. And Kay was one of my flight attendant friends, and we'd been friends for many years. And I said, okay. And she said, tell her everything's fine. I'm happy. And I don't hurt. I'm fine. And so she disappeared the same way. And I called up Kay, and I said, Kay, who do you know that has long black hair, who looks like she's about 18, and has this dress that's made out of leather with fringe on the bottom, and it has a row of blue beads along the bodice? And she said, well, she has white hair. And I said, well, she looked like she was about 18 years old, and she didn't have white hair here. And she said, Fred, she was killed yesterday in a car train accident.
Oh, my God.
Oh, boy.
And she was, her daughter and I were best friends, and I was raised at her house most of my life. Another interesting experience, I'll make it quick, is I happened to be over at this flight attendant's house. We were friends, no big deal. She had a common law husband who got colon cancer and died very quickly. She cared for him. And I went over to see how she was doing. And she sat down on the couch, and I sat down on a chair that was 90 degrees to the couch. And I looked over towards the credenza, and I could see like a being of light over there, a yellow, very yellow light. And as I was watching him, he kind of drifted over to her, and he leaned over, and he kissed her forehead. And I said, Kay, do you know what Dennis just did? I said, do you feel he's here? And she said, oh, yeah, I feel he's here, but I can't see him. And I said, well, he came over, and he leaned over, and he kissed you on the forehead. And she said, I felt the cold air, but I didn't know what it was.
That's perfect. And, Gary, thank you. The name of the book, The Sacred Promise, by Dr. Gary Schwartz. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesur, Stephanie Smith, Ross Mitchell, George Nappy, and Punnett and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.